The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show Best Of Podcast.
Back. The second hour is live. Busy day with a lot of news on Oklahoma and Texas. And then in the most recent story breaking, Tommy Reese about to become the next offensive coordinator at the University of Alabama. He had been at Notre Dame where his offense was, well, okay. 30 years old. He's been at Notre Dame for a while. And those are the numbers. Let's get back to the calls. And Ricky is in California. Hey, Ricky.
Good afternoon, Paul. I'd like to go down memory lane with you for just a minute or so. And then I've got a challenge for Jim from Tuscaloosa and I-Man. First of all, in honor of D'Amico Ryans being named the head coach of the Houston, I guess it's the Houston Texans,
yes,
of the NFL, I want you to recall, 15, 18 years ago, you had a phone caller that called in about D'Amico Ryans, and he could tell you everything about D'Amico, every tackle he made, every time he sacked the quarterback, intercepted it. But the whole conversation, he kept referring to him as D'Amico Ryans this, D'Amico Ryans that. You remember that, Paul?
I do remember that. Yeah, yeah. D'Amico was from, what was he, from Bessemer, I think? I'm trying to remember. I vaguely remember that. That was very funny.
Yeah, I just thought it was great that he just went to all the trouble to know everything about his favorite player, but he did not bother to learn to pronounce his name. Also, Paul, I wanted to volunteer to be a witness on your behalf. I understand Jim from Tuscaloosa has got a defamation of character suit against you.
Yes.
Because you said something about what he said, and he said he didn't say it. So I will be a witness on your part because Jim from Tuscaloosa, I heard it with my own ears. He said, if I hadn't have gotten hurt, I would have been as good as Ted Whitman. Now, that's exactly
Ricky,
what
that's
he
right.
said.
And by the way, we happen to have that on tape. So,
can you play it back for Jim? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I don't know the proprietorship of the tape right now, but we have it somewhere here. And so Jim's, we are going to save that for our final argument. So I don't want to give it away yet. Hey, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out Lee in Alabama. Hello, Lee.
Hello, Paul. How are you today, sir?
We are well. Thank you.
I, second time caller, long, long time listener. I tried to get in earlier this week and make comments on the passing of Bear Bryant. The morning that I heard the news that he had passed, I was stationed in West Berlin in the Berlin Brigade.
Oh, my goodness.
110
wow.
miles behind the Iron Curtain. We still occupied that part of Berlin from World War II.
Sure.
When I heard the news, I literally felt like I had lost a member of my family. Never met the man, always wanted to, but being raised in the military and then spending over 20 years myself, you know, in and out of Alabama all my life. But I just wanted to pass that on that, you know, it was, to me, just devastating that I heard that he had passed. Always looked up to the man and thought he did a great job for Alabama. Some good positive coming out of Alabama instead of all the negative that normally does. But anyway, I really enjoy your show. Keep up the good work. And I just, let you know, an old soldier. I had feelings from the bear, you know, for the bear when he passed.
Well, that is really an interesting story. As you said that, I started remembering that time in the world, and they had to. I mean, you were there what 6 years before the wall fell.
I was there from 1982 to 1985.
Right. So the wall fell. Yeah, a couple of years after that. That had to be a fascinating experience for you. Well, thank you for sharing that, and you be well. Thank you very, very much. Let's check out Chris, who is up next. Hey, Chris. No, Chris. That's always. How about Paul up next? Hello, Paul.
Hello, Paul.
Good afternoon.
Do I have you?
Yes, you do. Thank
good
you.
Good afternoon. Again. So, this is Paul from Oregon. So, the question I have for you has to do with the NIL, and I keep waiting for somebody to come on your program as a financial expert and talk about what this financial bubble is that we call the NIL. It seems it's an unregulated market, and it seems that all unregulated markets come to a big explosion at some point, and a lot of people get left holding the bag. Now, maybe this was a glimpse of this previous winter when Florida was supposed to pony up $13 million for somebody, that, and happily they didn't. But I guess what I'm wondering about is what, you know, what kind of a financial bubble are we in here? And who's going to get left holding the bag? And
it reminds me a little bit of Wall Street in 2008. Everyone knew they were making bad deals
right.
on these mortgages, but, hey, that's not my problem. We'll worry about it some other day.
So, yeah, so these contributors to these NIL funds, that's what I'm wondering about. You know, what's their security for it? I don't get that there is any.
No, there isn't. And having been on, you know, a lot of campuses recently and having spent time talking to not only young people but administrators, there's a real concern, too, about that being dead money. What I mean by that is it's one thing to donate money to the building fund or the library fund or the GAF or something. This money really isn't going for anything. It's being thrown around to try to beat the next guy who's throwing money around. And I think ultimately, thanks for the call, really interesting point. Ultimately, the universities are going to have a reckoning because the money that they used to have to, you know, expand the library or enhance the experience on campus is not going to be there because there's only I was with a group of boosters a couple of months ago somewhere, and they were already weary of how much more they were being asked to give, and on top of, you know, giving to these collectives, they still have to buy their tickets with a certain minimum. Hey, thanks for the call. There's a lot of we'll get a lot of reaction coming in on the Tommy Rees hire. Let's get some more right now from Steve up next. Hey, Steve, go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Paul. How are you doing today?
We are doing great.
Oh, Paul, it's a sad day, but we got to hire a man named Tommy Rees, 30 years old. I'm just wondering how many phone calls does Saban have to make? I mean, the Conde Cavaliers are fixing to roll the streets of Mobile tonight. I thought one case was enough. Looks like I got to get two because I'm fixing to see moon pies and offense go downhill. What's going on, Paul?
Well, you tell me. What don't you like about this?
Well, is it coaches don't want to take the wrath of Saban on the sideline with these kids? I mean, can we get an NIL to get us an offensive coach? Because I just don't know what skilled player is going to be excited that Tommy Rees is going to shape their career, Paul.
Well,
I mean,
let me say this. I mean, he's a young guy. You know, he's. I mean, whether Notre Dame fans are happy or not, I don't know. I think there's some mixed opinions. He's in the same spot that we have seen people like Jim McElwain, Lane Kiffin, Steve Sarkisian, Brian Daboll. I mean, these are some major names, and, you know, in no way has he proven himself to be in the same league as any of those. That doesn't mean he won't be successful. But the real challenge is he's leaving behind a proven quarterback in Sam Hartman. But what it tells me is that he wanted out of Notre Dame because Notre Dame is a private school, and I don't think private schools can compete any longer in the NIL place because they just don't – their alumni are not going to contribute to the same degree as the bigger schools. A lot to chew. We'll talk more about it with you at 855-242-7285. Quick break. Back with more after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back. Randy's up next in Georgia. Randy, how are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you.
I got two questions for you.
Okay, Randy.
Have you heard anything else about... I've heard a lot about Alabama coordinator. Have you heard anything more about Todd Munkin at Georgia?
Yeah, Randy. All I know is he has spoken to the Bucks about their open position, the one he used to have, and I don't know what the final determination has been yet. I think it's still up in the air.
Yeah. One more thing. Okay. Being that Texas and Oklahoma is not coming to 2025. Will they rearrange the schedules? Because I know that Georgia is scheduled to play them in 2028. Will schedules change?
Yeah, Randy, I'm sure they'll wait it out. I mean, right now, remember, Georgia had that game scheduled this year. I suspect that game's off the board now because that game would have to become part of a conference rotation. So I think when they canceled the game in Norman, they canceled the return game as well. Hey, thank you, Randy. Appreciate your call. Philip is up next. Hey, Philip, you're on the air.
Hey, Paul, how are you doing today?
Very well, Philip.
Good. A couple things I wanted to ask you, maybe you can clear up for us. The NIL money that these players get, what happens if they take this money and then they leave the school? Do they have to give that money back?
Well, I think all these things are agreements, and depending on the terms of the agreement, I would think they would not have to give it back. We have a guest coming up in a minute. I'll make sure I ask him that question. But I think everything would be done on an annual basis, so I don't think they would have to give it back. Thank you for the call. Jim is in North Carolina. Hey, Jim.
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call. A couple of weeks ago, you and I spoke after you had made a comment about the AJC article about the tragic accident in Athens.
Yes.
And how it was a little bit maybe ill-timed. Well, you probably hadn't seen it, but the AJC had another one today, midday. And the whole thing is because a staffer who is, let's say, in charge of player relations, you know, they've got all kind of guys that, you know, kind of keep up with 85, 18 to 22-year-olds. And he showed up at the scene of the accident. And the article tries to imply that there was something untoward about that.
Okay.
But if you read the entire article, it turns out there was nothing wrong with it. And I just want to talk, just speak to you about this is journalistic malfeasance is what I think. And of course, the AJC is pretty good at that.
Well, Jim, I don't know. I haven't seen that one. I thought the other one was really curious. And then the one thing I didn't like was the explanation. I think if you feel strongly about what you report in an article, then you don't have to explain it away. To me, that was very weak. But I think the bigger question is journalism today, and it's seen better days. How about that?
Well, yeah, because I didn't major in journalism, but to me, journalism 101 is report the story, don't try to make the story.
Well, yeah, but I think the problem, one of the problems today, though, Jim, is that when we were younger, the local newspaper had tremendous weight and influence, and now it doesn't because there really is no such thing. So it's all a digital game, and to be seen or heard on digital, you have to say something, and you have to promote it, and you have to occasionally push the envelope, and just normal garden variety reporting doesn't do that very well.
Right. Well, I couldn't agree with you more. One more thing, if I might mention it. On the NIL, that horse is out of the barn. I don't think you can control NIL. I think that the caller from Oregon was right on target. I think the market's going to take care of that. There's going to be some of these things that blow up, and eventually you get what you pay for, and I think the market will settle down.
Well, I think you're right, Jim, and I really do appreciate your call, and I agree with your entire premise. Thank you very much. How about Steve in Pine Mountain, Georgia? Steve, you're on the air. Hello.
Oh, how you doing?
We are doing great.
A couple of things to point out. Ted Williams' birthday is August 30th. I think he ought to have a birthday cake that day. and that's the gym. Second point, legend. Did you know that Ric Flair is a huge UGA fan? Woo! He's giving locker room talks. His daughter's on the track team at UGA.
Well, Steve, that's true, but Ric Flair is basically a fan of Ric Flair because I remember him taking shots at Kirby Smart about a year ago and saying he was going to cheer for Jim Harbaugh in the Michigan-Georgia semifinal game.
Yeah, well, Ric Flair is a wrestler, and so like most wrestlers, they're all about themselves.
Yeah, no. I mean, I don't. I'm not here to bury Ric Flair, but he really disappointed me with that because one time he was on here talking about how much he loved Auburn because I think his son was going there. Then he loves Georgia. You can't. I mean, it's like who's the NASCAR driver that tried that act as well? But they all try this.
Yeah. All right. More serious note. Brock Bowers. You mentioned yesterday, he turned down $500,000. He wants it to go to his teammates. He's probably the best player in college football this coming year. He probably won't get the Heisman. I looked it up. Only two tight ends have gotten the Heisman, 1936, 1949. But he's a hybrid wide receiver. You know, he's amazing. But I don't know how this collective NIL money is going to be spread out among, but he wants it to go to his other teammates, and I think he's just an incredible guy.
No, that's really smart. I agree.
I think the colleges, there's only a few coaches, Smart and Saban, are able to handle this. I think they're going to go to a, just like a general manager, like a John Schuerholz was with the Braves, to handle this money and basically free agency. That's what's happening and everything. So, about a month ago, Paul, this is my last point. A month ago, you had a caller asking about mentioning the cost of going to a game and how it's sort of out of the reach of the average fan. So I went to the Tech game this year by myself, drove up, got up at 5 in the morning. UGA is a hot ticket, of course. But I sort of calculated my cost and everything, bought a ticket through an app, bought my parking pass through an app, and then I was asking people around, what is the average cost? So UGA is in hot demand right now, of course, but most of the season ticket holders are spending money that you could buy a nice car for, basically. And if you don't have season tickets, you're going to be buying tickets and parking through these apps. Everybody's getting the piece of the pie and everything. So it is out of reach for the average person to go to a game now, unfortunately, like that. And that's just the way we're headed with it and everything. But I just wanted to mention those things. I really think the NIL is poison, and I'm hoping that it will somehow get rid of it. But these teams are going to have to learn to deal with it because it's not going away. And I've spoken to you a couple times before about these young kids. They're just not able to handle managing the money. And
well,
so,
you know, Steve, let me say this. Speaking of that, we're about to talk NIL with somebody who has been at the vanguard of this new movement. We'll talk to Jim Cavell in just a few minutes. More later on the hiring of Tommy Rees at Alabama. More information on the Oklahoma-Texas situation. A lot of news happening on a Friday afternoon, early February.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Every day we talk about NIL, and we decided we might as well get somebody on who maybe knows what they're talking about. Jim Cavell has been with us many, many times. We're at the forefront of the NIL movement with his own firm in Birmingham. Jim, thanks for joining us again. Good afternoon. And here we are. We're past the year and a half mark of NIL, and a lot of different opinions on how it's going. How are you?
Paul, I'm great. It's always great to be on the show, and I know it's a newsy day, so I appreciate you making time for me. Great to be with you.
Tell us how you think it's gone so far, because a lot of people do not understand it, and they can't stand it. Now, those are the people that call in the show, not the athletes and the coaches and the alumni.
Well, I think that it's a brand new market, and it's got a lot of problems, like most new markets do. It's evolving fast. And there's also a lot of regulatory fragmentation that has created a lot of pain for a lot of people. You don't know what's real, right? You hear stories and rumors of deals that are certain sizes. And I always say, whatever you hear, cut it in half, because it's probably not real. But the reality is it's going to take time to evolve. And I don't think that the call for one national bill from Congress is going to fix everything. That's not going to fix everything. A lot of what's going on, especially with collectives, is going to continue, and it's going to evolve over time. So it's very interesting.
Why do you think some of the most prominent people in the industry, commissioners, presidents, leading authorities in the NCAA movement, always seem to have the same answer? Let's go to Congress. What's all that about?
You know, I think some of it has to do with the fact that the NCAA never could set strong NIL regulations due to the risk from antitrust implications in other cases, and Alston being the most recent. And so getting protection to be able to set strong rules is something I think a lot of people think will be a solution. But let's just go to the Rashada situation a week or so ago. If we have one NIL bill, will that prevent that situation from happening? It won't. The reality is the only thing that prevents it is the athlete becoming more sophisticated and understanding that the University of Florida and signing an NLI, a National Letter of Intent with the University of Florida, is separate from using his NIL and doing a deal with Florida's collective, the Gator Collective. And there's a lot of other sophistications that he's going to have to develop in how he structures his contract with a collective and sets the term. Maybe he doesn't want it to be too long because he wants the ability to go into the portal after his first year. Like, these things are really going to continue to be problems, whether we have one NIL bill or not.
Jim, we have a lot of questions. In fact, one came a few minutes ago. If a player leaves, does he still get paid? How are these deals structured? Give us some. I mean, these are basic NIL 101, but they say the questions keep coming up.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to my one example in the Rashada situation of him having some help around him, some wisdom around him. I mean, could you imagine being 16, 17 years old, navigating these waters, making a choice in a school, and then trying to understand how NIL worked? It's a great need that the student athlete has with just being given advising and sophistication around how they put these things together. But to your point, I think what some kids are doing is they're signing a deal that's, 8 months or 12 months, and they're getting a monthly payment for their NIL rights. And then with that, they're on the hook to do some things, whether it's appearances or autographs or endorsements on social media, to fulfill that monthly fee. And sometimes it's a collective that's funding the monthly fee, and they're bringing in businesses for the athlete to produce revenue, from autographs, from endorsements. Other times it's a simple appearance that the athlete has to do in exchange for the money coming from a collective. But ultimately, it's these deals that are longer term with a monthly payment that you're seeing more and more of for athletes. And yeah, if you sign a deal that's 3 years and you decide to go into the portal 1 year in, once again, your NLI and the school you choose is not necessarily tied to your NIL and these deals you're doing. And so whoever's doing those deals with athletes should be thinking about that risk, as should the athlete.
Jim Caval with us. Jim, we saw Alabama announce our collective. LSU had one the other day. When these happen, what does that really mean to the campus? And can you make deals outside of what the school is doing in that, under that umbrella?
Yeah, so you can. If you're an athlete, you can still go do deals with anyone that comes to you or anyone you want to go to. The key is that the collective is going to attract dollars that are endemic to the school, usually the same people who are donors donating towards the school's new building or capital campaign, the same donors that are donating toward a scholarship fund in their family's name are now being asked, hey, if you want to support NIL, you can go to this collective that's a separate entity from our school, and you can support them in supporting our student athletes' NIL activity. And I think the schools that are doing it best are talking to the folks who lead their fundraising department. Usually it's an associate AD for development. That person needs to be incentivized with a total number that has NIL in it. If that person is not raising money for NIL too, by having a place to send people that they're talking to who want to give towards NIL, then they're not going to really be motivated to help. And now all of a sudden, you have the same donor list being talked to by like five different parties, right? You've got the fundraising team trying to build a building, talking to the same donors that these collectives are talking to. And I think some of these newer deals you're seeing with schools are trying to align and consolidate those efforts so the donors are hearing from one source on all the options, of which NIL is one of the options they can support.
Once again this week, Jim, we heard people talk about the NCAA cracking down. I know it gets a big chortle around the peanut gallery, but you see any sign that the NCAA is really doing anything more than just bloviating here?
I don't think that they're going to be able to crack down very hard on these things. I think that right now the rules from the NCAA are just a waiver with a few key points on it. They've done some clarifications every 6 months to try to clarify what the school can and can't do. But at the end of the day, it's going to be hard for them to really crack down when they don't have a really concrete set of rules that define what can and can't be done. And also, as I said earlier, even if they did or Congress did set rules, collectives are still going to exist. They're still going to set up a separate entity and figure out ways to create attractive financial programs for student athletes. I think that that's only going to continue.
G, Jim Caval with the latest on NIL. It's a never-ending, always a suspenseful situation. Jim, come back soon. We always enjoy the conversation. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate you having me.
We continue a busy day with some news about Oklahoma and Texas. Are they coming into the SEC a year after some of us thought they might? And what about Alabama's coaching search? It seems to have ended. Tommy Reese, the apparent pick as a new offensive coordinator. So that means who will be the defensive coordinator? Won't be Todd Grantham. He's heading back to the NFL.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Welcome back. Tyrone is up next in Pittsburgh. Good afternoon to you. Did not hear him. How about Chris in Tennessee? Hey, Chris, go right ahead.
Paul?
Yes, Chris. Good afternoon to you.
Hey, so with all the talk about Texas-Oklahoma today, I was just wondering, which division would they be, each team be in, and what do you foresee their schedule to be?
Yeah, Chris, more than likely, there will not be divisions. We will see, I think it's likely, not automatic, but likely that the SEC would shift to four pods, have nine conference games, so you would have three permanent opponents, and then you would rotate the rest of every other year.
So, they wouldn't change. I mean, they would put Texas A&M, playing each other every year.
I would say that would be highly likely. Yeah, I mean, I think you would keep, not automatic, but I think you would keep Georgia, Florida, Texas A&M, Alabama, Auburn, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. I mean, the tried and true games. Some would be lost, but I would say in most cases, because it's not automatic, because some schools have, there are several schools out there that are the number one opponent of countless other schools. So, I would think the most obvious games will live, yes.
I was just wondering, who do you think, every year teams, to play Texas, Oklahoma, and
Listen, though, you've got to balance it, though, Chris. You can't give Texas, A&M, Oklahoma, and LSU. So you have to figure out a way to keep it. I mean, it has been one of the most – it's been going on now a year and a half. And the SEC athletic directors met this week in New Orleans, I believe, and it was topic one on the agenda. And I don't know if they've come to a resolution or not, but it is the most difficult thing because everybody has an objection you could end up, right now, we've heard this debate from Florida and LSU, Florida people, by having to play LSU, and certain schools certain schools get a really easy game versus a tough game. So the hardest thing is going to balance it, and it's really what happens in that room of athletic directors with the commissioner and the league executives, how they figure out something that would be equitable. But what's equitable today may not be that way in 6 years.
So do you think adding them two will kind of annihilate some of the other rivalries, or
yes, yeah. I mean, I mean, there's only so many. If you're going to play three, schools every year, then take your pick on who goes by. Let's say let's use Tennessee for example. Right now, Tennessee has rivalries with Alabama, with Florida, with Georgia, with Vanderbilt. Something's got to give, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think they would
Kentucky
get rid of Tennessee, Alabama, though, do you?
Well, it depends. If Tennessee ends up with Georgia and Florida, is it really fair to have them play Alabama every year? So, I don't know how you do it. There's a lot of – it's like any negotiation – the key to negotiation is that everyone comes out with something, but you try to make it as fair as you can. It's not easy to do. In fact, it's quite impossible to do. Let's talk to Ren next in South Carolina. Hello, Ren.
Hi, how are you?
Ren, we are well. Thank you.
Cool. Me and my dad are big fans of the show.
Well, thank you very, very much. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Who's your favorite team?
Well, Ren, I tell you, I try to be neutral. I try to just sit here and navigate the debate. Who's yours?
We are definitely Georgia.
your dog fans. And Ren, how old are you again?
11.
Ren, you picked a good time to be a Georgia fan. If you had been born earlier, you might not have been. You might not have seen as good of football as you are right now.
Yeah.
Are you aware that you're living in a dog world?
Yeah.
What,
we can't wait for the Super Bowl.
Who are you pulling for there?
Kansas City.
Well, Ren, listen, you call us again. We always enjoy the conversation. Take care of yourself. Thank you very, very much. The Mysterian is calling next. How are you?
Paul, are you there?
I am. Thank you for calling.
There are things that we must clear up.
Okay.
We just must. And I don't want everyone to get excited and get an attitude about things. The first thing with Tommy Rees is everyone needs to learn how to pronounce his name.
Okay. Well, how do you pronounce Rees. His name?
It's not Rees. Rees is English and possibly Irish. But Rees is Welsh. R-E-E-S apostrophe is Welsh. And that's what he is. He's a Welshman. And Welsh people are very, very hard workers. And they're very honest. And his people have been honest since the get-go, since they came to this country. And the reason people don't like him in the South is because he's a Yankee. They didn't like Jeff Gordon when he came down, started racing. And look what he did. If you give Tommy Rees a chance, he's liable to do the same thing.
Help me out. Now, I mean, I know, Rees is 30 years old. I just looked up his resume. He went to high school in Chicago and was born in Los Angeles, which is a long way from Welsh country.
Well, let's get off of that. I told you the truth,
I don't see anything about being born in Wales. I see him being born in.
No, he's not born in Wales. He has Welsh heritage.
Well, I mean, my grandfather is from London. What does that mean?
That's good. Now, Paul, he had.
I mean, does that mean I stop every day at 4 o'clock and have tea and crumpets?
Let me say something, Paul, please. He had to juggle 4 quarterbacks at Notre Dame. He had to deal with high scholastic entrance standards. He had a lot of things he had to deal with. And now he's going to have a little bit more relaxed standards. I'm not saying anything bad about Alabama. I'm just saying they are more relaxed standards.
Well, you know, I tell you what, I would disagree with you on that. I think this misnomer that athletes going to Notre Dame have to meet the same standards that you do at Harvard and Princeton is a crock. I mean, it's been proven that Notre Dame has a double standard when it comes to getting athletes in there. You know that. And I would argue that Alabama has incredibly high standards now as an academic institution.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Aaron, just open your eyes a little bit. There's a lot of documentation that would support what I just got through saying, but we don't have time for it right now because we head to the next hour. We hope you'll stick around that Tommy Rees, or whatever his name is going to be the new offensive coordinator.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.